Welcome to the Draw.Biz Podcast, your weekly dose of fantasy footy content.
Welcome to the Draft Doctors, talking all things AFL Fantasy and Supercoach Draft all year round. New pods are dropping every Wednesday during the off-season. I'm Doss, and we are talking forgiveness on the show this week. Players we are willing to forgive heading into the 2020 season, who we expect to bounce back next year and will be willing to draft despite an underwhelming 2019. Speaking of underwhelming 2019s, a fantasy grand final defeat, a broken foot the week before the marathon he's trained for all year, Stevie Fizz, welcome.
G'day Doss, g'day listeners. And look, it was Father's Day on the weekend, and what a joyous time it is for everyone. I was sitting there on the couch with the blanket over my legs and scrolling through Twitter, and all the dads were screenshotting their whiskeys that they'd gotten and all the books they'd received, and Baby Fizz came charging out onto the couch and said, "Let's play hide and seek for Mummy." I said, "Okay." So we got the blanket and we hid under the blanket, and Baby Fizz has just let rip. And for Father's Day, I got a Dutch oven. That was fantastic stuff there.
Baby Fizz, awesome. All right, also on board this week, it's a man with a brand new microphone. He's got microphone swag. It's Barry White's second cousin, Jono Crockett. Welcome.
G'day, listeners. G'day, boys. Yes, hopefully the dulcet bass in my voice will ease everyone onto their Wednesday commutes, as we are now dropping from now on after the... I wouldn't call it a social media backlash storm, but maybe a little ripple tide from people looking for us on a Monday.
Definitely. We need to hear the backstory of you recording the wrong way into your mic as well, Jono, maybe a bit later. Our resident McLaughlin brother Cam is here as well. And George Hall and Smith robbed of a top 10 finish in the Gold Coast BNF, Cam.
I know, he got completely robbed, and he's stiff to miss in this show as well, because he will get absolutely no forgiveness after his paltry season at the Suns. I was just kind of thinking on forgiveness, please. Like last year, I think I just joined the pod, and I was, coming off a tremendous win in my home league, and this was a really easy show to go through. Now looking back on it and doing this show now, it's like I'm still so bitter about the people that I'm going to talk about, but I still think... time will heal before the end of next year or the start of next year.
Yeah, it has been tough with some of these names, but we will get into forgiveness, please. And Steve, you are starting off with your forgivingness.
So we're going to start off with Jaden Short. And we sort of all had Jaden Short somewhat high in our ranks, being one of Richmond's main men in the kick-in rule. He was coming off a pretty nice 2018 where he averaged 76 Dream Team and 85 Supercoach points. And that's dipped down in 2019 to 70 Dream Team and 64 Supercoach. And part of that is he did have a very much injury-affected game where he came off very early in the piece. You take out that game and his average actually... In Dream Team is actually better in 2019 at 76.5 Dream Team. So that's just an easy win there for us, and 69 nice Supercoach points. And I want to look at his last five games where he's played three of the top five teams. He's come back in after his, the shoulder issue?
Elbow.
Elbow, yeah, that was a strange one, wasn't it? And he's put out 105, 93, 78, 60, and 87 for an 85 average in Dream Team. So that's really nice to me. And we've got a question about this particular stat later. And people are looking at the wingman this year in a different way. And one thing Jaden Short does is he finds space and he gets marks. And the guys who can do that certain thing have found themselves in a bit better scoring mode, if you will. So he's taken 10, 9, 7, 6, and 3 marks in those last five matches. And again, that's against reasonably good opposition. I want to highlight some of his teammates here. So Bashir Hooley, to me, is an obvious regression candidate for 2020. So he's averaged 10 points less per game with Jaden Short. That's Dream Team points. With Jaden Short in the side, we always stress that internal competition. And Hooley and Short couldn't be more similar. They don't win the contested ball. They rely on handball receives or taking marks or taking the kick-ins to build their score. Another player who is in the same sort of vein, who is being spoken about as a possible departure, and if he's signed, well, sorry, is Brandon Ellis. So he's a rumoured out, and he is one of the top uncontested midfielders in the game. Also takes 5.4 marks per game. So he's possibly leaving. I think that's good for Short's scoring prospects. He also did have some weird time on ground issues once he came back off the injury. He'd be down to like 71 one game and up to 88 another game. He spent, when he came back, he was a little bit on the wing before drifting back into defence. So I've got no qualms drafting Jaden Short. You're obviously getting him a little bit of a discount based on his 2018 form. Not sure about the Supercoach scoring. You know, the contested ball isn't his game. And with the quality intercept players for Richmond back there, I'm not sure that he'll really light that up. But I certainly like him as a you know, going later in drafts in 2020.
And I was probably a bit too keen on getting Short this year and taking him a bit too early in drafts, especially. And considering the injury, it's definitely not looked that great. But one of the reasons was an article that came out this year to do with who takes the kick-ins based on the new kick-in rule. And in 2018, Jaden Short took 53.4% of the team kick-ins in that year. So that was way ahead of the second place Nick Vlosten, and even he was ahead of Bashir Hooley. So that was kind of the reasoning behind me. I think he was one of the guys that they always look to. He's got a really nice penetrating kick. And I think all the other stuff you said as well. So kind of, I think him being more of a consistent player coming next year and hopefully over those injuries, because that's really what held him back this year, I think, as well, in terms of getting into consistent scoring. And I'm pretty behind the Bashir Hooley regression as well, and maybe a little bit of a bump for Jaden Short. Now, Jono, I think you've got
Can I just say, yeah. I think he's a super, super keeper buy. Really, really one of the better keeper buys going around.
Yeah, good point. Jono, you've got our next. Who are you giving forgiveness to for 2020?
Well, a lot of you may have thought I would have stuck the knives into Angus Brayshaw, but found that a little bit too low-hanging fruit. So I've gone with my former boy in Sebby Ross. Now, he just really shit the bed in 2019, dropping 13 AFL fantasy points per average and only the fourth Supercoach, dropping the four possessions per game, which worked out to be about two kicks, two handballs per game, as well as a 1.5 marks as well. So there's a lot of your point scoring ability right there gone. A lot of that was due to Richo. He just wasn't spending as much time in the middle getting the pill. He was averaging 20 to 25 possessions a game. So compared to last year, that was up around 30 possessions a game. Hashtag Richo out. In comes Brett Ratten, and the scoring seemed to just magically reappear. Instead of those low to mid-20s games, he was getting the mid to high 2020, so in the low 30s. So it all changed once Ratten started up. In the end, in the last six games, Seb Ross went on to average 116 Supercoach and 106 AFL Fantasy. So that gave me a lot of hope for the 2020 season. Did Dan Hand coming back in for those last six games has helped him, with him, Dan Hand, getting the better midfielder and Seb Ross playing on a lesser leg. And we know he's going to be in the guts and on the wing, and he's got a great goal-scoring ability. So the scoring in the second part of the season has shown to me that Seb Ross has the ability to, has my forgiveness, and I'll look to draft him next year.
Yeah, it depends where you think he can get back to, Jono. Like, I've got a little bit of an issue with Seb Ross. Do you think he's going to go back to the 107 plus Dream Team, or do you think he's going to go back to the 100?
It'll be in between the 107 and the 100, which I'd be fine with.
Because we know. I'm looking at. Sorry, go.
we know what his ceiling's like. I mean, he's pumping out 140s and 150s in both formats, so I like the upside on that.
Yeah, my caginess is around, like you mentioned, where he's lost his scoring. So he's taken 30 less marks this year and 36 less uncontested disposals or uncontested possessions per game. That's with a game less between 2018 and 2019, and also one less contested ball, but that's, you know, so neither here nor there. So to me, he's losing it on the outside, right?
Mm.
Now, St Kilda, like you mentioned, they've added Dan Hanbury. The other thing they did was they've let Billings go to the wing. So he's scored like a machine this year. And also, they're potentially adding Brad Hill. Like, that's the rumour going around. Okay. So I'm a little bit concerned. Like, just, I know he can score, and like you, the second half of the year was fantastic. I just have a little bit of pause just based on that internal competition.
Yeah, I completely understand. And look, with his discounted average this year, people might not be as hot as him going into next year, and you might be able to get him as a later midfielder. Because I think I took him as an M4 this year, and probably way too early. Well, probably, that was about right, just the expectation, and the return wasn't there. So M5 would be pretty good.
Without the numbers in front of me, Jono, I think this is his second year going ham in the second half of the year as well. Do you think that could be playing into the some part of him just builds form over the year? Because this has been the second time. I think last year he just went absolutely bonkers for the last, you know, couple of months, and it sort of seemed like he did that yet again this year.
Yeah, it's quite possible, but again, they had a lot of injuries in the midfield and was probably playing a certain role up until they got their full contingent back. So I'd like to see how they go, how they click over the pre-season, and make a better judgment then.
Cam, forgiveness please, who have you got?
Yeah, I'm going to start with Ollie Wines, actually. So I had him this year. We all know that he came into the year pretty undercooked due to that infamous wakeboarding accident where he injured his shoulder in the preseason. He returned and after that played himself into some form across the first five games of his year. But then he suffered another unlucky injury, basically breaking his leg. Now, after what seemed like forever, he returned and quickly broke his thumb. Basically, the year for him was like a Limity Snicket's series of unfortunate events, but he still managed to produce some goods in his last five games. He went at an average of 105.8 AFL Fantasy and 101.4 Supercoach. So the reason why I think I'll give him forgiveness for next year, even after such a, you know, unlucky year, is just he's 24. He's previously been pretty sturdy, so five of his last 7 years in the comp, he's played 22 games. And I just think that of the mids that are there, so from a competition perspective, you know, you've got people like Rocky and Boak and the young guys that are coming through, and even Carl Amon to an extent. They can all play different roles. Ollie Wines is one player. Like, they tried to play him in a different role when he first came back because they wanted to protect his shoulder and sort of ease him in. And he played this weird, like, hybrid in-out role and had no effect on the game and had putrid fantasy results or scores as a result. So he's kind of, he's got inside mid and that's all he's got. So I would suggest that's probably where they're going to keep him. And, you know, from the rest of his years, he's basically scored 90s. He scored 99 or 97 average or something in his second year. He's an absolute gunner. I genuinely think he can go over 100 next year if he has a full preseason and maybe some vitamin D because those bones are brittle.
Can I ask, did he actually let you down?
Yeah, he did from a games played perspective.
But that's like, we knew he was coming in underdone. Like, he's averaged the exact same in AFL Fantasy. Like,
yeah. I don't think anyone predicted two breaks in 1 year. So yeah, we knew he was gonna be a couple of rounds in, and then to go out with, you know, another injury and then go out with another injury after that was pretty disappointing.
Also, do you think next year, so you're expecting, you said 100 plus from Ollie Wines, like he may very well do that, but I kind of see him more as like a Luke Parker type that just gets in those like high sort of mid to high 90s, yet he's still a really good player. Would you suggest there is room for growth that he will become this player that's going to be a 100 plus guy in AFL fantasy?
Well, I don't think he's going to be big hundreds. I think he'll be sort of 102-ish next year. I think from a growth perspective, he's still young, right? He's literally 24. I think if he can add a tank to his bullish game, then he could potentially add, you know, another 10 points onto his current average.
All right, fair enough. Well, it's on to me, and I have Alex Witherden, who I am willing to forgive for season 2020. Now, in our fantasy preseason defender rankings, he sat at 5th for Steve, 5th for Cam, and 6th for Jono.
Sorry, we'll say, Dossie, I did tweet out, I won't be shocked if Daniel Rich averages more than Alex Witherden this year.
You and your won't be shocks, I tell you what. Yeah, no, you did.
It ended up being a good call.
No, I do remember that. And obviously the Daniel Rich bump this year, which was huge, definitely did hurt Alex Witherden in this season. So he dropped 13.3 AFL fantasy points this season and 11.5 Supercoach points. So he averaged down at 74.7. So he finished as the 27th best defender in fantasy this season. So this is a guy who finished behind Cade Simpson and Connor Blakely, who we've both been pretty harsh on for not providing you that draft value. So tell me you weren't drafting Alex Witherden ahead of those guys on draft night. And I mean, maybe you would have. Steve, you might have been drafting the Cade Simpson based on a few of your calls you made early in the season. But I mean, you wouldn't have been, like, you would have been expecting big things from Alex Witherden. He didn't perform for you this season. And he was down 4 disposals overall, 1.3 kicks, 2.6 handballs. But where I think that he can actually improve next season is, the major one is Luke Hodge is going to go out of there. So he's announced his retirement for next season, going to become a coach next year. And I hope he does stick to that, considering how close they are to potential glory this season. Hopefully they maybe can win, so he definitely hangs them up. But he was down 4.6 uncontested possessions, which I actually think is where he can sort of make that up. So I think there's just going to be a bit of ball going around next year. There's 16 disposals just from Luke Hodges' retirement to swivel around a bit. Got to remember as well, this is his fourth year next year. So he's only turning 21 actually next week on September 10. Happy birthday, Alex Witherden. And I think he's just got a lot of room to grow next year. I'm wondering what you guys think, because I will say that the Daniel Rich continuing to be really good next year and potentially taking kick-ins and stuff like that. Because Witherden did take bulk kick-ins in 2018, which didn't help his average at that time, but I think we were expecting the bump. He averaged his nice score in 2018 without the kick-in pluses. So if he does get a few more kick-ins, etc., I am expecting a bump. But Jono, what do you think?
Yeah, I got to agree. I mean, with Hodgie retiring, we see now a lot of teams use two to three players as those rebounding defenders, and we do know Daniel Rich has been a target in the past. So they could look, you know, if Brisbane do well in September, they could look to lock down on him, because he's been a driving factor for the Lions this year, which would free up Witherden to maybe get a slightly even more bump. So yeah, I don't mind that analysis, and I'd be looking to grab Witho again next year.
I will say, though, what sort of range, it's way too early. I just want to know, is he going to be high up on the boards like he was this year, or is he's definitely going to be a little bit lower down coming into this season?
Definitely going to slide, yep.
All right, well, I think we'll get on to our second player each, and Steve, you've got your next person you're willing to forgive.
Yeah, so next person that I'm willing to forgive is Jack Gunston from Hawthorn. So in 20, and realistically, he's been a very much an early F2, late F1 sort of player across his career, very consistent. In 2018, he averaged the 86.6 Dream Team, 96 Supercoach. That's dropped 10 points in Dream Team to 76 and 16 in Supercoach to 80, which makes him By average, the F48, we know that includes a few guys who have one or two games above him, but so he's really borderline F4, F5, which is pretty horrendous and almost unrosterable. So I have a lot of time for Jack Gunston. I think he's a really good player. And he's down 2.4 disposals. He's actually gone up a fraction in marks, and he's down a goal a game. So we know counting stats have really gone down across the board for all players, all statistics, essentially. The big one for me is his goal accuracy. So his career mark is 57.3. That's fine. 2019, that became 45.6. Okay, there's a 12% drop. That's enormous, okay? So he's missing more shots than he's hitting, which is very un-Jack Gunston. I think it's a sort of thing that's an outlier. Shots on goal, this is huge as well. In 2018, he took just over four. We know Hawthorn are a top four side, and they've fallen out of the eight. 2019, it's gone down over a shot per game to 2.85. So not only is he getting less shots per game, he's converting them at the worst clip of his career. His marks inside 50 have dropped off slightly. I think it's got more to do with what's happening up the field than anything else. Hawthorn were one of those teams who were really good. They beat some of the best teams in the competition. They just didn't score particularly well. I expect Hawthorn to bounce back in a big way. And the main reason is they get Tom Mitchell back. I think it's huge. He's one of their top inside 50 ball users. And when you think about it like this, their top three inside 50 players this year were Isaac Smith, Chad Wingard, and James Warple. Two of those guys are horrendous, well, statistically, were horrendous kicks this year. Chad Wingard, Tom Mitchell is a 13% better kick than he is, 10% better than James Warple. And he's about the same as Isaac Smith, so that's not too bad. Give me Tom Mitchell kicking the ball inside 50. I think Hawthorn can bounce back in a big way. And I think Jack Gunston, and especially with the stank over key forwards, and if Hawthorn pick up Johnny Patton, then hopefully it's a little bit less attention on the great Jack Gunston.
Yeah, and only 27 years old, turning 28 late this year. So I probably would have thought he was a bit older than that. So still well and truly in his prime.
Yeah, he ditched out on the Crows nice and early.
Very nice one. Now, Jono, who's your next player?
It's Steve's boy, it's Old Man Simpson. I've never actually owned this guy in any sort of salary cap or draft format, so perfect candidate to speak to all about him. 2019 was statistically one of Cade's worst years since his very first year, dropping down to a paltry 80 AFL Fantasy and 81 Supercoach, which was a 15-point drop in AFL Fantasy and 24 in Supercoach. Massive drops for Cade Simpson, who's just been a fantasy stud for many a years. His possessions dropped down by 6 compared to last year, down to an average of 20 possessions a game, which was 3 kicks, 3 handballs, and 1 mark a game less than 2018. Now, I've saw a lot of Carlton this year, but I just couldn't really put a finger onto what they were doing. Was it the Daisy Thomas factor playing off the half-back line there? Was it Carlton trying new blokes through there with the inevitable retirement for Cade Simpson? We know it won't be in 2020 because he signed a one-year contract. Or was it a new game plan, just moving the ball quickly out of defence where he wasn't getting those cheap 1-2 kick mark and handball receives as well? So, but it all turned around after round 18, where he went on to average his 97 Supercoach and 99 AFL Fantasy. So he did return that D1 scores that we do know he can do. So, but an 80 average, that's around your D4 range going into next year. So you might be able to pick him up as a bit of a bargain next year as a D4, who's someone who could return a D1, D2 average for you in 2020. So I'm willing to forgive this year as a bit of an outlier, and good things for 2020.
It's an interesting take to take on the old man, the 35-year-old. Steve, I want to know, because you were pretty high on him this year, and you've kind of admitted that that was maybe a bit wrong to come into the preseason thinking that with Nick Newman coming into the side. What do you think about heading in and giving him forgiveness for 2020?
Oh, like everyone, it's going to come down to draft value. I don't have a problem drafting him per se, but it depends where he's going to go in drafts. Like, I'm perfectly happy missing him. Nick Newman played fantastic, just owned the pill back there. I know Dale Thomas is out of Carlton, but I can only expect Sam Doherty to go back into their defence. So I'm pretty cagey about him becoming a D1 again. I'm not sure that's in his range of outcomes for me, but I've got no problem with him bouncing back.
Okay, I think I don't want to go too hard, but I think I do have a problem with him bouncing back next season. So I just think this is the sort of time where you see them. The one year deal's there, and he has had a resurgence in the final sort of couple of months, especially maybe you would say the under the Teague factor, and you do have Daisy Thomas going out. But I'm definitely a bit more cagey heading into next season, just with body wear and tear. And I think
hardly missed a game.
I know, but he's the age factor is huge for me.
What's that movie? He's like, but she's so old. I mean, look at her. She's old. Yeah.
See, it's the long sleeves. The long sleeves give him his youthfulness and can just play on forever. He'll beat Dustin Fletcher's games record.
Well, climate change is going to have his nuts then, Jono. Because it's going to be too hot for the sleeves.
Never. I suppose if Tucky did it in one of the grand finals, I suppose Simo will do it too.
Hey, it wouldn't shock me if he bounces back, but I don't think he will. Okay, we'll get on to Cam. Forgiveness, please.
Yeah, so the next one is Connor Blakely, another lad who was predominantly injured this year. So he did cop that injury in the preseason, and we can maybe start to call that doing a Blakely. He pretty much spent the entire season in defence and pumped out a paltry average in all formats, a 17-point average drop, and finished the year ranking as the 47th best defender in the game, which is, you know, quite far down from where we all had him ranked going into the season. We adjusted our rankings accordingly when he was injured, but I don't think any of us really thought that he'd go so low towards the end. Why I'm okay with forgiving him is it's anyone's best guess what that midfield looks like next year. At the moment, there's no coach. I mean, they were so desperate, they called Brad Scott. And because they inherently have no idea who's going to be coaching there, we have no idea who's going to make up that midfield group. You could probably guarantee Brayshaw will be in there. You can guarantee Fife will be in there. But, I mean, you even look at Reece Conker and Blakely and, you know, Chera and
Langdon likes and something. Tucker. And
well, Langdon might go, right?
That's true.
I think there's maybe a world where, I know we waited for it all year and it didn't come. I think there's a world where actually Blakely does get time there. And I know he's historically been incredibly injury plagued, but he managed to play 14 games in a row for once after he actually came back from his injury. So maybe he's slowly getting over those body concerns. What I want to see from him in the JLT is just a bit of a signal. Because it's one of those ones where if he goes bananas in JLT, everyone will be over him like, you know,
fat kid on a cupcake.
There we go. I didn't want to go with the sizes thing, Jono, but that's fine.
Hey, I'm fat. I don't care.
But yeah, I think what I'm hoping for and the best case scenario for every one of our listeners is that he plays limited minutes in JLT, but attends a massive volume of CBAs in that time. It would be off most people's radar because of his average from this year, and he wouldn't put up big numbers, but you know that he's probably going to get them based on those CBA attendances. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting as well. I mean, you would have been even more comfortable had Mundy not re-signed, I suppose, as well, for him to get, you know, definitely that mid-time. And with Mundy re-signing, you feel like it will be the bit of Brayshaw, bit of Chera, bit of Mundy, and then all of a sudden those mid-time with Fife in there as well, sort of, and Walters getting his run as well, sort of does make you worried a bit again. But it's an interesting
one. At all.
Can I throw this out there? Like, if Brad Hill and who's the other jobber?
Langdon
go. What if that takes Wilson out of defence to a wing? Well, I don't see Like, my concern is I don't see a way Blakely gets out of there. Like, I'm completely with Cam on the preseason watch, but I'm really worried about Blakely.
You think he can't get out of defence?
Yeah, I think I'm concerned that's the problem. I look at Fremantle, man. Their team can't kick the ball to save their life.
Yeah.
Like, they're really bad.
I think my gut feel is that of the people who can play inside and support Matt Fife, it's, you know, Brayshaw could probably play outside. I can see...
But he can't kick.
Wilson's the only ball mover, really.
And yeah.
It's Mundy. It's their ball users are Mundy, Walters, Wilson, and Brad Hill. Like, their inside mids are like Darcy Tucker. Nat Fife.
Hang on, like, I think sort of what you guys are trying to say is Reece Conker season, baby.
No one is ever saying Reece Conker season.
That's just like saying George Hall and Smith season.
Hey, that's right.
I think I'm with Cam. I think it's a massive preseason watch, but I'm really cagey about it. And if someone wants to take him, I'd rather them deal with it, to be honest. And the reason I think we had him high was we saw Lachie Neale go out, and it was within his range of outcomes to go into the midfield. And a new coach might provide that opportunity. I'm a bit worried.
Yeah, correct. And for me, again, it's sort of, he'll be so far down the list. Like, even just from if you filter by averages, right? He will be off the radar if he stays under the radar in preseason. And I think, you know, if you can pick him up as D5, bang.
That's a lottery pick, isn't it?
It is.
All right, my final forgiveness. And I did go the low-hanging fruit, Jono. I went with Gussie Brayshaw. So, unfortunately, nobody else wanted to pick him up. The wounds are still fresh, and but I got to forgive him. It's part of the show. I have to say, it is forgiveness. So, Angus Brayshaw has my forgiveness for season 2020. It was a bit of a strange year for Angus Brayshaw, as we all know. So, his stock was flying through the roof in preseason. So, he averaged about 116 AFL fantasy points in the back half of 2018 and 122 in his final five games of the season. So, a bit of the system there. We look at those guys that are really consistent scoring in that back half of the season and that we think can maintain into 2019, it was at that stage. And so, he pumped some huge scores in JLT. I think Jono and I were at one of those games. He played against Brisbane. He looked absolutely mint condition. We were just loving how he was going about it. I think the way I sort of saw a bit of Rockcliffe in him, he doesn't have that great disposal, but he just goes around the ground, just plods a bit around, but manages to find the pill anywhere he goes. But we had him ranked number 8 for Steve, number 8 for Cam, and number 6 for Jono. So all in our top 10 for the midfield this year. So we're not quite sure whether that early season elbow injury, I think it was for Gus Brayshaw as well, that might have sort of hindered him a bit and had him a little bit more on the outside role. Might have been just a bit of hashtag Goodwin out or something else to blame. But he did drop nearly 5 disposals a game, 1 less mark a game, a bit less tackles, less clearances, less contested possessions, nearly 3 less uncontested possessions. So just down all around the board. Obviously, Melbourne were a much worse team as well, so we were expecting them to maintain and be as nearly as good as last year, if not better than last year. So that's where sort of I think our process was a little bit off. I think a lot of people would have been on board with us there. So yeah, just wasn't quite there. There was a few weird things with time on ground issues as well during the season. I was actually expecting it to be quite a bit lower than what it was. He basically had pretty much the same time on ground for each year, so I'm not going to blame it on the time on ground at all. But I want to know what you think, Steve, because next year I'm going to be high-ish on Angus Brayshaw but not go crazy this year. Like, I could probably see, I'm not going to say an average, but I wouldn't be shocked if he goes over 100 again in AFL fantasy. Steve, what do you think? Do you think a bounce back is in order, and do you have forgiveness for Angus Brayshaw?
Yeah, I've got massive forgiveness for Angus Brayshaw, mostly because I don't think it was bad process. We look at what he was doing early in the year, and it was exactly what we expected, and he was basically returning value on where you drafted him. We know he got moved to the wing, And then at the end of the year, they put him back inside. Lo and behold, he starts scoring like a machine again. Now, Melbourne are rumoured to be going after Ed Langdon. If that comes to fruition, that occupies one wing. They will push Angus Brayshaw back into the midfield. Like, they can't stick him out there. There's no reason for that. The player I'd have concerns about in that situation would be James Harms not getting as much go in there. So I've got massive amounts of forgiveness for Angus Brayshaw. No problems at all drafting him. It's probably going to be hard to have him ranked number 8. It'd just be foolish. But I certainly think he can bounce back in a massive, massive way. And he should be on every salary capper's radar, and he should be huge. For all Draft Doctors listeners, he should be, you know, someone you have above ADP so that you snaffle him up in your draft.
Yeah. These guys didn't quite make the list, but I want some really quick-fire thoughts on a few players before we move on to some questions from our listeners. Toby McLean, 94 point. This is just the AFL fantasy averages I've got here, not the super coach. So 94.4 down to 68.3. We saw Josh Dunkley take that midfield role and grasp it with both hands, while Toby McLean struggled to play pure forward role. Jono, are you going to have any forgiveness for Toby McLean, whether it's even just as a late draft sort of steal potentially?
No, I think I'm going to put a line through McLean. He's going to have a bit of competition with the bloke like Mitch Wallace, Lin Jong, even fighting with Bailey Dale and Lipinski to get that starting spot. So, yeah, he scored well in a couple of games late in the season, but that consistency is not going to be there, especially with Liberty to come back as well.
Got to throw out, you know, with his average being in the tank and we're expecting so many forwards to lose, I think McLean's going to be someone to retain. Is he just a dart throw late in your draft, John? If we're expecting Western Bulldogs to be a better team, which I think we probably all are.
Oh, if the dart throw late in the draft, sure, but we're not going to see him reach those lofty heights. What was it, 2018?
Yeah, he's definitely that dart throw pick. Sam Menegola, 97.5 AFL fantasy to 77.6 in only the 9 games this year. He was forward eligible for us this year as well, I believe. Cam, you're the Cats man. What do you think? If Tim Kelly's going on the way out, could he potentially come back in?
Yeah, I think that's probably the one scenario where he gets more time. Otherwise, I think, you know, it's more likely going to be scores that are up and down like they were this year. So even when he was in the team, it was sort of 30 and then 60 and then 100 and then 60 again. Unfortunately, it's a weird role, and it's definitely that mid/forward role that he'll fill. And, it, you know, he'll retain forward. So maybe, as Steve was saying, in regards to forwards being a bit thin next year, that makes him slightly more relevant, even if he's playing that role. But yeah, it's a bit dependent on Tim Kelly.
And Devin Smith, 106.6 AFL fantasy average in the year before 2018. He was our top forward that year, down to 78.9 in only 7 games. Injury-riddled season. I know Cam in the preseason was a little bit low on him because he broke the tackles record the year prior. Didn't think that was sustainable. Had Dylan Shield coming into the team. But I wonder, Steve, what are you thinking for next year and forgiving Devin Smith?
Yeah, no, I've got no problems forgiving him, but, you know, we don't expect 106 if we're realistic in our values and maybe expect 85 to 90 and he's good. And, you know, he always comes with that little red flag, doesn't he?
The games played flag, yep.
Yeah.
Definitely does. Now, on a few of our listeners, Russ says, these are his guys, he's forgiving. He says, only one of the Brayshaws. Jaden says, I mean, surely Callan Ward has to go up, right? He only averaged 3 fantasy points this year.
Look, Jaden, we'll never besmirch the great Callan Ward, the hair that snaps combs when they try to go through it. Much like yours, Dossie, that's a fresh do.
Thank you. Now, Alex says, Witherden never again. So he disagrees with me. And Witherden was a tough one to say because I really do see the bounce back there, but I'm not sure as to what lengths we see it go to. So that is
Can I say on Witherden and Jaden Short, there's one man that sticks in my mind and I'm like, fuck, I hope these guys aren't Luke McDonald. Like, or someone who Statesman keeps pumping up in Cade Collegiazny. That's just That's and a Ryan bad Clark. Life to run.
Yeah. Josh, one of the biggest headaches on draft day will be fantasy flirt Connor Blakely. And new coach, new midfield role, he says. So he's on deck with Cam. And that midfield role is really what you're looking for if he's going to bounce back in 2020. A reminder to everyone listening that we go year-round. The pods are dropping on Wednesday during the off-season. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss a show. Coming up soon, we have the You Suck Show, which is a highlight show for all our worst calls for season 2019. We also have a keeper show coming up with The Statesman, so subscribe and stay tuned for plenty more off-season content. Also, remember to leave a rating and review on iTunes. Jono, we have a target of 230, I believe it is, which when we hit that, what are you going to be doing again?
So we're at 227, just three more to go. We're in the off-season now, so that'll take about 6 months till we come back to draft season for that to occur. But no, it will be pie-in-the-face style of a plate of peanut butter. So smashing my face into some peanut butter, doing it for you, the listeners, get us to 230, and then it will be on to the great man, the Statesman, to make him drink some, I'm going to say, some cheap Shiraz or something like that.
Beautiful. Keep them coming in. We only need three more ratings. You don't even have to leave a review if you don't want to, but we do
leave
like
a rating.
Reviews. We'll get on to some questions from the Draft Doctors family, and you can find us on Twitter at the Draft Doctors. So Doug wants to know, do you guys have the cumulative season totals for the CBAs you recorded? And we do not have those. Doug, I don't know, Steve, you probably haven't done that either, but we only recorded them from around round 12 or 13 during the
buy rounds, yeah.
So
yeah.
We don't have
We could probably work them out from where they were. I mean, hell, you could do it, man. They're on the website.
Yeah.
Come on, Doug.
Doug, at Genius Doug. He's a genius, so go for that, Doug. We have Supercoacher says, given that you are all doctors, what was your thesis based on, and where can I locate the published versions of them?
Yeah, we used to get this sort of shit all the time, if I remember back in the day, Jono.
What did we go with, the old Nick Riviera school of...
I think the jokes have worn a bit thin 4 years in, so yeah, I'd update the material.
Cornflakes box, always very the best harsh. Place to get it.
Tom DT.
I was thinking of worse during the day, and I'm not going to say I'm on the pod. That's all I'm saying. We're a family pod. Not sure what family, but...
Yeah. Have you seen the Hells Have Eyes?
Risty Watch from last week says that we are not a family pod, Steve. I've got to say, I didn't even hear what you were saying last week. That's why I brisked past it, but anyway.
We're still watching.
Tom DT... Interested to hear a discussion on this. It felt like players on the wing had a massive spike this year. Do the stats back that up? If so, why did this happen? And do you believe this will be the case again in 2020, Steve?
Yeah, so like I mentioned earlier in the podcast, all counting stats, and I think, Cam, you had a bit of a look at this. Maybe you can just touch on this briefly.
Yeah, pretty much disposals, kicks, handballs, marks, literally everything across the board was pretty much down.
Yep. Yeah, so everything was down across the board. Hitouts, goals, blah, blah, blah. Everything that contributes to a score. The one area that... And what's really interesting about that is if there's less goals and hitouts, that means the ball's in play more, right? But what happened was the wingmen were the ones who actually started taking... like a lot of marks per game. And when I say a lot, I mean their career average was bumped up. So we got Lachie Whitfield. He's gone up to over 8 a game. That's a defender sort of range. Mitch Duncan's over 7. These are all career highs. Ricky Henderson, career highs. Lachie Hunter, again, career high. Andrew Gaff, 6.3. It's probably his career high. So the marks per game, the ball movement was slow. What's slow ball movement? It's kick mark, kick mark, kick mark, kick down the line, stoppage. That's what that looks like. So the guys who can run, get free, take marks, they're the ones who were taking a bit of a boost in scoring. We know Hugh McCluggage had a bit of a breakout. So those sort of wingmen, Brad Hill been good before. I mean, and some of these guys have been good before. Zach Merritt's certainly in that boat as well. does that continue? I'm not sure. I really don't know whether coaches will start to speed up, but it was a trend across the season, and the teams who played slow down the boundary were the more successful teams. Teams who tried to go through the middle quickly and maybe didn't have the skill, like a Melbourne, those teams got found wanting. So I think it's a wait and see. This is the first year of the 6-6-6 rule. The teams adjust and maybe speed things up. I don't know. Can these players get overdrafted next year? Of course they can. So that's going to be up to... We'll have a look at that over the ranking season. We're still, you know, we're still in season theoretically right now, although football doesn't matter from this point on. But certainly that's why those wing players got a bump.
All right. And I actually found one more guy in terms of forgiveness that somebody's mentioned on our Instagram. Jameska says, not Sicily. What do you guys think on Sicily for... are you guys going to give Sicily forgiveness? I mean, he was definitely slightly down on what I think a lot of us thought for 2019. Sorry, what do we think for next year?
I was really close to covering Sicily because, you know, of everyone that really disappointed, I feel like he was up there with Brayshaw for most people. I can't forgive him going into next year. I know Birchall got injured again, but man, when he came back, Sicily's scores really tanked, like, harder than they were. Birchall basically took his role. For me, it's a... I'd be very happy for someone else to take him in draft. And if he goes well, great. Otherwise, you know, not on my radar.
Yeah. All right. And Stevie, what's the foot update? We need to know, are you going to be running this marathon or not?
Well, I can't tell you what the foot update is because, believe it or not, last Monday I was just sitting here fiddling around with some stats and my knee started. I go, oh geez, my knee started to feel sore. Morning my knee, and it's on the opposite leg, strangely enough, was like a goddamn basketball. Oh, wow. So I've been hobbling around last week with this massive knee. It's starting to go down knee, but it's still swollen. So I'm hoping I can get some running in next week, but it's, I don't know what's going to happen, man. If I can't run next week, then yikes.
Mm. Come do the City to Bay instead. Adelaide.
I've already run the half in Adelaide. I love Adelaide. I'm always happy to go to Adelaide.
Nice. All right.
Not in summer. Fuck you and your 47 degrees.
All right. We'll wrap it up there. That is the Draft Dodgers.
I was just checking it out. Someone made a great joke. Sorry to cut you off for the 17th time here, Doss, but someone tweeted out a fantastic joke on Twitter that why is it that Geelong have to go to the Palladium to host their best and fairest night when they could have it down in Geelong, don't have a venue big enough. And the guy that the medal is named after, I don't know how you pronounce that, Cam. Can you help me out?
Yeah, no idea.
Actually. Yeah, he died in Ararat, so bit of history.
Thanks for cutting me off, Steve. We'll see you next week.
Bit of history, Doss.
Thanks for listening to the Draft Doctors Podcast. For more tips and in-depth analysis, head over to thedraftdoctors.com.au.